Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to Paul Listening Behind the Curtain as we take a look at a couple of shows you don't want to miss in the Chicago area coming up. And we're going to begin with one of the great classics of all time, The Sound of Music is back in Chicago playing at the Niederlander Theater only through November 2nd. So you want to get your tickets quickly to see it at BroadwayInChicago.com. But I get to chat with an old friend of mine from a previous theater experience that we had. We'll talk about it. Say hi to Christiane Knowles,
who Hello.
Is in this tour. Welcome back to, or soon, welcome back to Chicago.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be back again.
Now you come back to Chicago and Sound of Music playing Mother Abbess. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I just want to start by saying, having all of these sort of dramatic, powerful roles and all, you step into this, you're putting a habit on now. What, how does this change sort of? Is this like a, oh, this is the fun thing to do, or different from the roles you've had?
I love this. I am loving this experience beginning to end. It's fantastic. It's the easiest costume plot and hair plot I've ever had. I have the one thing, I don't have to do anything.
Makeup, you roll out of bed and you're in the costume.
I'm probably wearing more makeup now than I wear on stage. It's so easy, but the character, she's a hoot, at least the way I'm playing her. There's a lot of humanity. She is this strong, feisty, powerful, insightful, caring, compassionate, passionate woman. And, I love donning the habit and getting to inhabit her.
You would think with a show that's over 65 years old and a movie that's over 60 years old, everybody knows the plot. It's a true story, basically. But for our viewers and listeners who don't know, can you just kind of quickly tell us, what is The Sound of Music all about, aside from The Hills Are Alive and Julie Andrews flies?
I think The Sound of Music is about the search for faith, truth, love that you find in family, in music more than anything, how those bonds bring us together, hold us together, even in the darkest of times, and finding inspiration in each other and in nature and in, I mean, music, it's the sound of music, but so many people know the film and the treatment that the story, like you said, it is based on the writings of Maria von Trapp, and she is a real person, and she wrote a memoir, and then they adapted it to a stage musical. Rodgers and Hammerstein, Lindsay and Krauss wrote this incredible piece, and then Hollywood got their hands on it, kind of shifted it around a little bit. So what's so funny is that people are like, why did you change it? It's like, actually, you should, you know, roll the people over that made the movie and say, why did you change it? Because we're actually doing, you know, more what is based in the original script by Lindsay and Krauss.
Oh, which is good. Now, is that true of every national tour? I mean, so when it's on stage, do you know whether or not we're almost always getting that original script?
Most of the time, I think so. The first national from the previous revival, I think they stuck in "I Have Confidence," which was written for the thing. We have stuck in "Something Good," rather than the song that had been there, which was going to be cut anyway. We went to the Library of Congress and we read a lot of letters and notes and things from the Rodgers and Hammerstein collection. And so it was incredible to see, you know, what they thought of the film and what they were thinking of the movie, of the stage as they were writing it and what was going on. And so, but the thing that makes it different, there's a number of things, but Elsa, the Baroness and Max, those two characters, they're in the film, but in the stage show, they actually have two trios that they're a part of with the captain. So they don't sing in the movie, but they're far more present in this. And then the one that upsets more people, I think, is that in the stage show, My Favorite Things is sung by Maria and Mother Abbess.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, not to worry, there is still a thunderstorm. They just yodel with the children during the thunderstorm. They don't sing My Favorite Things. That is a different, used in a different way in this show.
But people who must hear that song will hear the song.
They will hear the song, okay. And they will hear it in a manner that will make them laugh, because I am a little bit of a thing as I'm doing it.
All right. I can't wait to see you, because it sounds like you're really bringing some different characterization to this. You, of course, get the number, unless they pulled it from you. You, of course, get one of the classic numbers of the show, Climb Every Mountain. Which
no,
is essentially-
I get it, and I get it twice.
All right, good.
Yeah.
Because I would protest if that was taken. But you basically, it's a message to Maria in many ways. But, you know, over the decades, it's really become an anthem. I mean, it's sort of like even young people who don't know a lot about the Sound of Music, they know that song.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, does it ever get boring? Number two, when you sing that, talk about the power of the message of Climb Every Mountain.
Climb Every Mountain is daunting. It never gets tiresome. I'm only still continuing to learn how to sing it every night. I have a cheat sheet of vowels and phrases and things to sing it well, how it's going to sit in my voice, that I am still looking at every night just to make sure that I'm doing it the right way.
You've been playing this role for a while, so is it? What is it? Tell me what that means. Is it, what is it you're trying to, what will I hear in the audience on opening night that I'd recognize that?
Okay. So when it is, the person who sang it and it was written for originally, was an opera singer that kind of spoke like this. And even B. Krebs, who taught at Carnegie Mellon, which is my alma mater, she was one of our voice teachers. And she did Mother Abbess in the first national tour. She used to talk like this all the time. And she had this deep voice, but with her palate that was way up here and sounded like an opera singer. And you can hear me. My voice is, hi, how are you? I'm a soprano, you know. So I'm nobody's mountain. So I've had to like really find ways to sing it in a healthy fashion.
Wow.
And also that is effective and dramatically fulfilling, but that I can do 8 times a week. So I really committed. I worked harder on this, I think, than anything that I've ever done in terms of being in the practice room and looking and pulling it apart. And as far as the message is concerned, I mean, you said it's a message to her, to Maria. It's a message to her as much as anything else. Mm-hmm. And certainly, the way that we have been approaching it is that Jack, Lord love him, came.
Your director?
Yes. He and I decided that I decided, and he was like, I like where you're going, that here is a woman who sees this young, vibrant Maria, someone who has so much love to give and is so connected to the nature and her environment and music, and it lifts her up in such a pure and wonderful way, that at that time, you know, you become a nun. That's one mm-hmm. thing. What are the things that you do as a woman, as for a career or whatever? But I think my character sees a lot of herself in Maria, and perhaps has had some sort of an experience in a former life before becoming Maria, so that she can see and really sense the feelings that she might be having that she's afraid to have. So by saying climb every mountain, you know, leave every stone unturned. Do not run away from things that scare you. Go toward them. Go to the difficult places. Figure out who you're supposed to be. And the way you do it is by just turning over every rock, going up over every hill, no matter how difficult it is, no matter how much it scares you. And then you'll get to the other side. And it's powerful and it's wonderful. And I love it. I love it.
I want to take apart a couple of things that you just said. I mean, in a good way, just to explore them. And by the way, I actually have a signed copy of Maria Van Trapp's novel.
Do you?
Or her book. So, you know, kind of reviewing that before seeing the show was kind of an exciting sure. thing for me. But that being said, when you describe the point of the show and the grand message that the show has, if you went up to the typical person who maybe knows this from television or something, they might have been surprised that you did that, because they'd say, really? Because I just thought it was a love story and a story about this family and, you know, and put it in the world of the historic nature of the family. So, but I guess it's both.
Let's say it's a love story. Okay. It's a love story. It's a young nun who, by all accounts and purposes, should not be a nun. She lacks the discipline. She doesn't have the calling. She thinks that's where she's supposed to be, because when she was younger, she heard them singing and it inspired her, because music moves her more than anything else. So she's like, how can I fulfill my life through music? By becoming a nun. But my character's like, no. You are many things, but perhaps this is not your place. But she's trying. So she is sent to a family to be a governess to this family and their 7 children. And they have recently lost their mother. So they are desperate for a maternal person. And she is desperate to love people. Yeah. And her way of showing love, as we have established, is through music. And when they lost their mother, the captain was heartbroken, and they used to have music in the house, but he stopped entertaining, he stopped playing instruments, he stopped singing, and the children lost that as well. They don't know it. So she brings music and love and light and laughter back into their house. All in the backdrop of 1939,
right?
Germany, Austria, where the Nazis are calling. So through the darkest of times, music and love and laughter and light keep this family together and take them through the most darkest time in their period to the next place that they get to go.
Are any of the kids still around?
Yes, I think a few actually, but
okay.
The person who played Gretel in the film actually came to see us when we were at the Kennedy Center last month. And she came on stage and, you know, waved. We got to meet her, and she was just charming and gorgeous and beautiful and a lovely lady.
I'm sure people that saw the Broadway version with Mary Martin a million years ago, that you won't have a lot of them in your audience, I guess. You might. But Julie Andrews in this lead role is something everybody knows. And I'm kind of, is that a blessing or a curse when you all perform and people have this movie in their head and they're either looking for it, waiting for it, whatever, or do you say, chill out, because you're going to have a very different experience here?
Yes. Yes to both of those things. I think that the love of the piece and the love of the music, and Lord knows they have so many sing-alongs now where you can go and along. And we've had a few shows where people have wanted to and have a bit, but which fine, you know, whatever.
I generally sit down front, so you can look at me and go, Paul, shut up.
No, but it's wonderful, because the credit to the production that we've created and the work that we're all doing. I think if there is a notion of, oh, here we go, we're going to do this. People are so drawn into it that they stop making it about them, and they experience it and allow it to move them. And there are moments that I still, I get, you know, goosebumps. And because even just the notion of what we were talking about, the idea of, here are these children who have not known music, have known fear, have known depression, have known loss. That's what they know. So they are disciplined. They march. They're not allowed to be children. And in comes this woman who starts with something as elementary as do, re, mi to get the, and they suck it in like sponges. And then the way Danny Medford has choreographed it, you know, that they almost leave her in the dust. It's not that she's the ringleader. She just goes, and they go, and then they start working off each other. And it just, you know, there's so many, I think people have come to see it and they just didn't realize how much they might be weeping from joy, from just inspiration. And it's funny and it's familiar. So that's good.
this may just be inherent in everything you've been saying. Look, there's been a lot of musicals written whenever some come back. Oklahoma, they brought back and completely turned it on its head when they brought that back, if you saw the most recent incarnation. But Sound of Music has just held up. As I said, it was a movie over 60 years ago and on Broadway over 65 years ago. Is there anything you haven't said to describe it which might answer the question, but what is it about this story, this musical, Oscar and Hammerstein, that just keeps people saying, I love it, I got to see it again, I don't care if it's 100 years?
I really think it's the music, the way that they constructed it. You can sit through it once and hum the tunes because they are repeated again and again and again. I think there's a story that Mary Martin said, I don't want to have to learn anything new in the second act. So everything in the second act, for the most part, at least for her, is repeated. So certainly as an audience member, then you sit through it. You're like, I'm singing this on my way home. I've been singing it, you know, all night. But the thing that's so incredible, and with what, especially the way that we've approached it, is going back to that original script, but not making it a museum piece. Yeah. You know, you cannot help but watch this through to 2025 eyes.
You also fall in some great hands. I know that on the NBC version, Audra McDonald played your role.
And this role. She played my role, and I was Sister Margareta. So I got to, you know, watch her up close and personal while she was doing it. But there are lines in this, people have thought, oh, did you, you know, punch it up? Did you change it because of, you know, where we find ourselves in the world these days? Yeah. And no, that's the script. It's going to resonate. You're going to hear certain lines are going to, you know, scream out at you. There's a line that he says, you know, all the people I invited to this party, half aren't talking to the other half, you know, and it's like, oh,
welcome to today.
Welcome to today. You know, yeah. You can't help but go, oh my heavens, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
It's such a treat to get to be with you again. And in a moment, I'm going to be talking to one of your castmates, Nicholas Rodriguez, who plays Max Detweiler, who is a fictional character. I think you actually existed.
I exist. I'm a version of someone who existed. Yeah. I think that I'm very much like Sister Gregory, who was instrumental in the entire creation of this entire piece. And I got to read her letters and her missives, and it was amazing.
And there's no risk of you like forgetting and all of a sudden start singing. Does anybody have a map from Evan?
I think not.
Okay. I would get up and applaud.
I'll see, you know. Yeah.
Well, I hope to see. I will be there opening night, and I hope to catch you afterwards because I have a little gift for you, which is
lovely
behind the curtain with my mug face.
Oh,
on
I
the
can't
mug.
Wait! Thank you.
And I'm going to get it to you. And by the way, not only will you have one, but viewers who want one of these can go to wgntv.com/store
and get your mug.
They can get t-shirts and hats and, believe it or not, shower curtains and skateboards with this.
Oh, that's
on it.
Fantastic.
You want a skateboard?
A skateboard? I bet the kids would, yeah, they'd love it.
I don't have one. But Christiane Knowles, congratulations on this great role. I can't wait to see you. I'm going to say this again when I talk to Nick, but it runs October 21st through November 2nd at the James Niederlander Theater. When you were here with Evan Hansen, you were at the CIBC. Have you played the Niederlander before?
Oh, goodness. I played the Schubert. I played the Chicago.
Schubert is CIBC. It was Schubert when you were there, I think.
Okay.
Chicago Grand Theater. So yeah. This is maybe your first time.
I may have played the Niederlander. I played the Auditorium.
It was the Oriental when you would have been in it before, I think. It had been called the Oriental.
No. Okay. So maybe this is my first time. I'll have to find out when I know
it's one of the grand theaters. The good news is... You're half a block down.
Husband was in Pirate Queen, and I visited him a lot. Would that have been there?
I actually think that was at the Cadillac down the street.
Oh, that was at the Cadillac.
Yeah. Right. But you will be a half a block from Garrett, so go in and get some caramel corn cheese corn, or if I can get some before I get to the theater, I'll pick you up some.
And love it.
Welcome home. Welcome back to Chicago when you get here. You're going to have a great time. Eat the deep dish pizza. Go to Little Monati's. You know what you
got. I have my list. I have my Chicago list.
All the things. Christiane Knowles comes back to Chicago for The Sound of Music. You can get tickets at BroadwayChicago.com. And stay with us because we're going to be talking to one of your castmates in just a moment. Thank you, Christiane.
Thank you.
And we are back on Paul Listed Behind the Curtain, continuing our conversation about Sound of Music coming to the Nederlander Theater, where it's going to play from October 21st through November 2nd. You can get your tickets at BroadwayInChicago.com. And joining me now is Nicholas Rodriguez, who plays Max Detweiler in the show. But actually, this is interesting, Nicholas, because you weren't always Max in this show.
I wasn't, no.
No, who were you?
So 10 years ago, when Jack O'Brien had this tour out, I played Captain Von Trapp. I closed the equity company as Captain Von Trapp.
Did you age out of Captain Von Trapp?
I don't think so. I think just when this was coming around, you know, Jack was revisiting some things and I wasn't going to go back out with the tour. And then all of a sudden I got a call and the creative team, they were looking for Max's and not quite finding what Jack had in mind this time around. And our conductor, Andy Einhorn, said, I think what you're looking for is Nicholas Rodriguez. And so Jack called me and he's like, would you be interested in this at all? And we just had some conversations about why he wanted to go a particular way this time. And it sounded really fun to me. It sounded really challenging and really exciting. And for this moment where we are in history. So.
Well, and you come across to me here as at least I know the Max Detweiler character, which is, I mean, just sort of a charming, witty, pushy, you're not pushy here, but there's this kind of complex character and you're kind of Uncle Max to the kids. So for those who you know, may think of you, they think back on the movie or I don't know, maybe there's some people around who think back to the Broadway show in 1960, whatever, but tell me about Max and his role here. And is this more fun than playing Captain Von Trapp?
It's fun for me. I mean, especially having done both, you know, I loved playing the captain. I'm only revisiting the show because I think it's so beautiful. And this production is so beautiful. And my dear friend of 20 years, Kevin Early, is playing the captain. So that's fun to get to watch him do it. But there's something about this idea, you know, of this Max, our version of Max, is this guy that's able to slip into any room and charm any person, be the life of the party. Be the affable plus one, you know, and to be perfectly comfortable with that and to charm his way out of any situation. And there's a lot of fun with that, you know, to be able to do that. And then kind of the take that we're doing with it, because he is called Uncle Max by the kids, you know, and he's clearly not their biological uncle, but there's some kind of, to us, it means that there's some kind of relationship that's deep and strong between the captain and Max, that he's around no matter what, even though they're both very different. The captain's very buttoned up and uptight, and Max is very bon vivant, the life of the party, will say whatever he wants. But there's got to be something deep between these men that the captain allows him to be around all the time. So we're likening that to like a deep childhood friendship or maybe boarding school or something like that. So basically the salt to the pepper of one another. But then they travel in the same circles. So it's a lot of fun playing with that opposite Kevin and Kate Lopress, who plays Elsa.
Yeah, for those folks who saw this maybe on NBC in the live version a few years ago, your role was played by Christian Borle.
Yes.
And I kind of had that in my head before I talked to you. Maybe it was to kind of set an expectation for me of what it would be like to talk to you. Because first of all, Christian Borle is amazing and wonderful. And not that I don't think anybody in a current production would look back at anybody, including Julie Andrews, and say, I need to, you know, recapture that moment. But I'm curious, when you think back of the people who played this role, like Christian Borle, it's almost a compliment to getting this role at this point, I think.
I mean, I do. I mean, I always love doing something that makes me say, wait, what? You want me to do that? You know, so, and I think part of the challenge of the moment is because when this was written, you know, 65 years ago, it was the intent in the form to be this quote unquote comic relief. You know, it's in the material. It's in the Rodgers and Hammerstein, in the Krauss book, you know, so, but we're getting to see it through a current lens, you know. And just because something was written to be funny 65 years ago, that same line could have very dramatic weight given our current political climate. So some of these things that Max says might have been funny in a different situation, but they're not necessarily so funny today. So, which I love about that is that let's just play it for truth. And if it makes some people laugh, great. If it makes people say, that hits a little too close to home, that's one of the really fun things about doing it.
So you've been on concert stages and just such a vast variety of things. This may be a little bit of a also light role. You were in Company. But talk about when you were. Was it prior to when, men became women and, they did some of the switching in the latest revival of that show?
So I did the latest revival in 2021 with Patti LuPone and Katrina Lenk and Jennifer Samard and so many other incredible people. And it was the gender swapped Marianne Elliott revival that won five Tonys. It was awesome. I stood by for five of the husbands, as we said. We divided the men up into the husbands and the boyfriends. So I
So
stood
you
by
worked with
for
Matt. Matt was in that show then, right? With you?
Matt Doyle.
Yeah, okay.
Matt Doyle, a whole host of Chris Sieber,
Love that.
embarrassment of riches in that cast. And it was an absolute joy. I wasn't with it. They had started rehearsals in 2020, I think in February, just before the pandemic. And I think they got through about six previews when the world shut down. And then when it came back in 2021, three people didn't come back with it, and I was fortunate enough to be one of the replacements. So we went back into rehearsals in the fall of 2021 and opened officially in December. It was awesome.
Well, the reason I bring that up is because, and I know, by the way, Sondheim gave his blessing to that, to the change. But I'm curious, when you do a show that has a history, like you have in Sound of Music, but like you had in Company, you're also in Tarzan too. But I don't need to talk about Tarzan. But I'm sort of curious, which is, when you take the stage now, do you sort of embrace the fact that it's a new look at a product that has some history behind it? Do you prefer being in something that is brand new, that is new, that we're not changing from something that was done 10 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever?
I think it's kind of both. I mean, there's pluses and minus to both things. It's always amazing to originate new work that nobody has an expectation of, but it's also a huge honor and blessing to be able to reinvent, recreate, and honor something that's been around. I've had the joy of playing Curly in Oklahoma and Billy Bigelow in Carousel, Captain Von Trapp in The Sound of Music, and all of those Jesus and Jesus Christ Superstar. People walk into the theater with an expectation of who they think these people are. And I feel like it's my job or our job as actors to honor that. And also to fill the box as fully as we can as human beings. I'm very different than the type that normally plays Max, So, and it's certainly different than people's expectation from the film. Unlike the character of Captain Von Trapp, two of the big scenes for Max aren't in the film. They were in the live capture that you mentioned Christian Borle did. But for the most part, I think people identify Sound of Music with the film. So, Kaley Capaldi, our Maria, and Kevin earlier, our Von Trapp, have that burden of living up to people's expectation from the film and then doing their own thing. But I don't feel that quite as much as Max because, the two big songs, as I said, aren't in the film. So I feel like when we get to them every night, you can really feel the audience lean in and say, "Wait, what's this? I don't know this part." So
That's a good thing.
there's a bit of honoring the parts they know from the film, but then also saying like, "Hey, there's this whole thing that you don't even know about yet."
I'm sort of curious, is that a fun thing? Do you get tired of the tour, tired of the city after city after city? Or is each one an excitement? Should be exciting to be coming to Chicago. But is each one a new level of excitement?
Oh, it totally is a new level of excitement, and especially for cities that I haven't been to, So just having the time to explore, there's not really enough time to get bored with the city. So, and then other ones we play for a long time. Like we were in DC for a month, which was awesome. It feels like you get to live there. We're in Toronto for 6 weeks, so it feels like you get to be a part of the culture, And Chicago, it's 2 weeks, so I hopefully won't gain 20 pounds from Lou Malnati's and Garrett's popcorn, but
You're
there will
going
be
to.
enough time for me to get my taste.
You should have some popcorn on stage with you and give it to the kids or something while you're,
Oh, that'll be really great for the singing voice. Really grateful. That's a really great suggestion.
Little Colonel gets it. Forget it, I won't even talk about that. That's a terrible thing. But do you also notice, or I guess you will notice, but when you're in front of a Chicago audience, I mean, there's a lot of reasons I think that producers or people like Jerry Mitchell and would love to try their shows out in Chicago before they make it to Broadway or go somewhere else. There's something different about the Chicago audiences. Do you know that to be true? Do you hear that from others? We're a
Well, I
pretty
know it.
discerning audience.
I know it, having seen some out-of-town tryouts there. I saw or early productions, saw Big Fish there. I saw Catch Me If You Can there. But also, there's a long history of intelligent, smart theater creators like Mary Zimmerman and Ife Butler and the Steppenwolf and the Goodman and all these great theaters. So there's a high level of intelligent people and theater savvy people in Chicago. So that's just what's so fun to play this version of the show. It's not just some cookie cutter cutesy, oh, look at the kids wearing curtains production of Sound of Music. Jack O'Brien really digs deep and goes to the heart of what's happening in 1938 Austria with this production. And yes, of course, we still have the very cute kids that sing their faces off, but there are a lot of it's over the undercurrent of what's happening politically. So, and I think smart audiences like Chicago really, that's what they're taking away from this production.
Yeah, I hope you'll find that to be true when you're on the stage as well, because it's a theater town. With all due respect to New York, and I love New York, but it's a touristy town. And so in front of an audience, you're liable to see a lot of tourists, and that's a good thing. But in Chicago, well, we have tourists, but you're also seeing people who live theater, who just this is what we do, and can't get enough of it. So I hope you find that to be the case. I just before I let you go, it was interesting when I asked Christiane like what the show is about. She gave me an answer that was very global, very sort of a worldly answer, and I said, "But agreed." But there are people who see the movie and just go, "Oh, I just thought it's a love story. It's about a family." And they kind of bring it in and bring it down. What is your view of the message of this show? Is it global or is it familial?
Well, I think it's 100% both. And I think for so many people, their global views start at home. So at the heart of our story is a love story that's about faith, it's about family, it's about hope, but it's also taking place on the backdrop of a huge global thing. Let's not forget, and this is a spoiler alert for anybody that's not seen the film or the show, it ends with a father taking his seven children and his new bride across the border for a better life. That's something that's very global and it's very now. But it's because he loves his family so much, and it's because he has such faith and conviction for what's right and what's good that he makes a very difficult decision. And he is our hero because he does that. So I think I completely agree with Christiane. It's completely global, but at the same time, it starts because there's this family with this deep, deep love for each other. And then there's the bigger family of this abbey and this nun and this group of nuns that cares for the people in their community. So,
Yeah, and that's the beautiful part of live theater because you can watch the movie again and maybe some of those same things are there in the same factoids, but when it got made 60 years ago, life was what it was then. But you're right. Here you are an actor on the live stage, you know what's going on in the world, and when these things happen now, you have to have it in your mindset somewhere that's like, wait a minute, this is resonating differently with audiences than it did in that movie.
100%. And whether it's subconscious or somebody that's deeply active, we're still all living in the same world. And Chicago, I'm so glad that we'll be in a theater, but you guys are going through it, and there's a lot of people in your town that aren't necessarily tourists. So, I think it's going to resonate with people on so many levels, whether you just take in the kids and curtains or you take in the bigger global picture too.
Can't wait to see the show. I'll see you on opening night. And it's playing from October 21st through November 2nd at the James Niederlander Theater, which, by the way, if you haven't been in it, is one of our grand theaters. It used to be called the Oriental. It's a grand theater, unlike a different one which Christiane has played, which is more of a New York kind of looking theater. But this is one of the grand ones. I think you're going to love it. Tickets at BroadwayInChicago.com. You don't want to miss it. Thanks for watching us here. My thank you so much to Nicholas Rodriguez for joining me. Uncle Max, I'll look forward to seeing you. And we'll see you all next time here on Paul Listening Behind the Curtain. Thanks for watching, everybody.